It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now, broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day and call for help. We were gods, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chip.
Welcome into the show. I would say the energy has shifted compared to where we were when this show started yesterday. It was, Nick, do something. Now it's, Nick's a genius. I all bow down to one Nick Caserio. When we were leaving the show, the Joe Mixon news had broken. We didn't have compensation yet about what the Texans gave up. Gave up a conditional 7th-round pick. And since that point, they have signed a big-time pass rusher in Danielle Hunter. Sorry, I'm trying to focus on this, but it almost feels like I'm back in 2020 because Lance is his own individual pandemic. It wouldn't be COVID, but it'd be something else. Lance went to the Bun B concert last night. Bun B had a lot of guest stars there with him. Apparently a really, really good show. And Lance did not recover well. Apparently he walked in 60-degree temperatures a mile and a half to and from his car, and now he's leaving snot residue on the mics and the buttons. So I got a Clorox wipe in my hand as I'm talking, simply because I don't want any of his dirty filthiness on me. But that's my personal struggle. I feel like I'll get through it at some point, but I'm hyper-focused on how disgusting he is and hoping to not get sick, because I rarely get ill, mostly because I keep myself away from people. That's the secret sauce. Not avoid the cold, not keep yourself warm, just stay away from people, and their germs can't get you. And so I'm a little more focused than I normally would and a little less focused on the show. But yeah, Danielle Hunter, a Texan, former Viking. So the Texans just swap defensive ends with the Vikings. The Vikings get the younger version, or a younger player at least, in Jonathan Grenard. They're paying less to Grenard. Danielle Hunter's certainly more accomplished. Was very productive last year and has been over his career as long as he's been healthy. So, Sean, we kind of ended the first segment talking about, at the very least, Texans Day 1 was boring. Texans Day 2, I don't think we can call it boring.
Less boring.
Less boring.
Not boring at all.
Yeah.
Actually, a lot of fireworks. That's where I feel like they've made their biggest moves of the offseason. We'll see, obviously, in the draft. But as far as free agency, and I guess Joe Mixon was a trade, but it was effectively free agency because
he was about to get cut.
Yeah, he was about to get cut. They traded a conditional 7th, so they gave literally the smallest amount you can give. And it was a big day. It felt like it was a little bit of turning the temperature up like 1 degree at a time, because you know, they had signed DeNico Autry, they had signed Al Shahir. I was about to call him Al Jazeera.
that would have been a rough one.
I was like, I know it's not that.
Yeah.
They signed Aziz Al Shahir and some special teamers, Jeff Okuda, Lonnie Johnson. And then, yes, that's when we start talking. Yesterday's show. And then, boom, Joe Mixon, boom, Danielle Hunter. I think was there another move? Another signing, like a somewhere in between the Lonnie Johnson and Danielle Hunter zone, where they made some moves that are all still kind of periphery, kind of depth moves, and then yes, they start throwing money around, and it went from Texans fans being like, do something, to now it is every national like talking head being like, the Houston Texans making moves in the free agency.
Yeah, a lot of discussion about what it means for the Texans and their status. Even our very own Charlie Pulillo talked about the fact that they're now a genuine contender because they signed Danielle Hunter and traded for Joe Mixon. The Joe Mixon thing, we talked about quite a bit, about the surprising nature of it considering the Texans' history, and maybe they have decided to now operate like all the other teams operate, where talent trumps all for the most part. Well, maybe not all, but particularly when something happens years ago and a decade ago as far as the big incident, Joe Mixon's off-the-field life, you say forget about it. And even Joe Mixon's been in trouble. We talked about it. Trouble, I put it in quotes. He's had some issues where the police have been involved over the last year or so. The Texans said, like, I guess they did their research. And they investigated and decided it wasn't a big enough deal to keep him from making this play, particularly when it only cost them, as Sean mentioned, a conditional seventh-round pick. So they get Joe Mixon, a distressed asset, who was eventually going to be cut. But, you know, you get in there, make a trade, so you don't have to battle against prospective teams as far as how much he will actually get paid on the open market. You just get in there, give up a second seventh-rounder, and we'll see the conditions on it and how greatly that draft pick will change depending on what Joe Mixon does, what are the conditions on it. But for now, you're looking at a valuable player for your team, and you didn't have to do much, and you only are going to pay him for a year. You didn't even have to do the multi-year thing as other teams who needed running backs did. So all in all, if you are apt to ignore the stuff that has nothing to do with football, a good play for the Texans. They're a more talented team overall. And now a team that people are looking at really seriously. And it all stems from not only their coach, but CJ Stroud. And this show will probably continue to do this because as free agent signings continue, you're going to hear flowery language, or at least you'll read flowery language. And I sent something to Sean last night. We'll get to another shameless tweet. This one about someone going back to the Patriots. But this is in the same vein. But this will actually be audio. This is Ian Rappaport this morning discussing Danielle Hunter being a Texan and what all went involved in getting that done.
The Houston Texans made a splash of their own. Yesterday afternoon, they agreed to terms with Danielle Hunter, the former Pro Bowler from the Minnesota Vikings. He goes home, a Texas native. He now lands in Houston with the Texans. This was the place he wanted, actually gave up more money elsewhere to go sign with D'Amico Ryans in this really good Texans defense and play with C.J. Stroud in one of the more up-and-coming teams in the NFL. He gets a two-year, $49 million deal, $48 million fully guaranteed. That's the biggest part of it, $98 million fully guaranteed for Danielle Hunter, a big-time signing on defense for the Houston Texans opposite Will Anderson.
So what? How much is guaranteed? It went from 49 to 48 to 98? I guess he misspoke at some point. I guess he was doing it live. But who does that help? Who's supposed to be impressed that he allegedly took less? Is that supposed to be great for Danielle Hunter, or the fact that the Texans and Danielle Hunter came to something where he's taking less money because of how excited he's supposed to be here? Who does that benefit? Us, a fan, to let you know that Danielle Hunter's all in on being a Texan and the Texans are an attractive team to land with? Is that what that's for?
Yeah, it's only for the fans. It's for no one else but the fans to be like, see, we got a winning culture. We got
a guy to take less to come here.
Yeah, we got people are dying to get here. Because no one else really benefits from that.
It benefits the people listening, like you said, the fans. But why does Rappaport need to throw it in? What's that for? Who cares? I guess I'm unique, but who cares if he took less? It's not like the Texans got him on the cheap. He still cost them a lot of money. It ain't a minimum deal. Like, if you want to make that known about the Steelers, and we know why the Steelers got Russell Wilson, because they got him on minimum value because the Broncos were paying all of it, and he was fine with making the Broncos do it. So that's a story. There's some context to it. There's an actual reasoning behind why that's going on. But as far as Danielle Hunter coming here on the cheap, it's like, well, it is, 48 or 49, depending on what time Rappaport said it in that 45-second sequence, over 2 years. It's still quite a bit.
Yeah. I think it also helps the player. It's like good PR for the player, too.
I get, yeah, probably.
To be like, he's committed to winning, all that stuff.
Yeah, true. But sure, he's still got quite a bit of money to come play.
$50 million for 2 years.
Yeah, I mean, committed to winning. He still got his bag. Don't worry about Danielle Hunter. He'll be just fine. $48 million. $48 million guaranteed out of a total $49 million.
So start a GoFundMe for
For that last million. Amen. He's one of the preeminent pass rushers. At least he was last year. 16.5 sacks, I believe it was, for him. And he is – this generally doesn't happen. A guy who is that productive hitting the market. I was looking back through the last couple of years about guys who were productive sack guys, whether it be pressures or actually getting sacks and finding their way to the market. Sometimes it happens through trade. Now, it might happen to Khalil Mack in a matter of hours. The Chargers at last check still aren't cap compliant. And Khalil Mack seems like the guy who's going to who will get cut. He had 17 and a half sacks last year at 32 years old. I think he'll be 33 in April, or maybe he just turned 33. And he looks like he's going to be out there for someone to grab. I think the difference between him and Russell Wilson, if you had designs of – if you're a fan of any team thinking you can grab Khalil Mack on the minimum, I don't think there's that offset language. At least I haven't seen it reported where no matter what he does, he can sign the minimum deal and the Chargers are still going to owe him the full amount or at least a large amount of what they were supposed to pay him. So Khalil Mack might be on the radar, but Danielle Hunter is a Texan and an extremely productive Texan, which if you were concerned about losing Grenard, you don't have to be anymore. 16.5 sacks for him. He had 10.5 the year before, so he has put up numbers the last couple of years, and now he'll try to do that with D'Amico Ryans. There's more stuff to get to. We're going to have a whole segment about guys who like to hold grudges. Isaiah Thomas, still with the Jordan stuff. You got Deion Dawkins, still hating on the Jets without even being asked about them. And then, of course, Anthony Edwards. He's all in on hating on the Clippers, and the Wolves had a big performance last night in L.A. Some big news for the Clippers were a back issue sideline Kawhi Leonard very early in that game, and that's always going to be an issue with the Clippers, injury concerns. And if Kawhi is out for a significant amount of time because of his back, it certainly changes the perspective of the Clippers. And well, the Wolves are under the same circumstance. They expect Karl Anthony Towns back for the playoffs, but he's out, and it didn't matter last night as the Wolves go into L.A. and get a win. Speaking of injured basketball players, we're going to hear from Ime Udoka on Alperen Şengün, and a new injury popped up. Cam Whitmore is going to be out for an extended amount of time, so we'll hear Ime's updates on those two when we come back. And also, a bit of a difference in his diagnosis compared to the injury and what it might mean, because I don't know if he knows what a third-degree sprain actually means, a grade 3 sprain actually means, considering what he said, or maybe he was given wrong information. We'll try to suss that out when we come back. Just starting the show. Del here, Sean here. You want to get in touch with us, you can tweet the show, at DelV2, at Sean A. Mapes. You want to call us, 713-780-3776. More Texans. We'll hear from Nick Saban after I kind of got after him yesterday. We'll hear what he actually said, and we'll hear from Ime. But we'll hear from Ime when we come back.
This is the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
Welcome back to the show. We will continue to update you on anything Texas-related if news breaks.
Funny you should mention that.
What happened, Sean?
According to Jonathan Alexander, the Texans have agreed to terms with offensive tackle David Sharp, according to his agency at Equity Sports. He last played for the Carolina Panthers.
And that's as much as you're really going to get. He didn't start last year. He played 6 games for the Panthers. He has 45 career games under his belt, 6 starts. So he may be a swing tackle, as Aaron Wilson's kind of couching it in his write-up on it behind Laramie Tunsil and Titus Howard. We will see what that might mean for George Fant or others, but the Texans signed some depth at tackle. So we're back into day one of free agency type stuff. Well, at least early in day one, because they did sign D'Amico Autry and Aziz Alshire. But all the stuff that led to that first day, bringing back guys like Eric Murray, among others. So another depth piece. We'll see if he even makes it to the opening day roster. But if the Texans see a void at the backup offensive lineman positions, David Sharp might fill it. So nothing giant, but it is a 2-year deal, so maybe they like him enough to have him around, and we'll see as we go forward what other moves the Texans might make. Before we went to the break, I did mention the Rockets. The Rockets get a win in San Antonio, a close ball game that saw Jalen Green get banged up late, and by late I mean on the last play. If you're watching that game, he sat on the floor for a couple moments. Eventually, he got up. His teammates got him up off the floor. He walked off under his own power, but he's a little banged up. I think he was grabbing at his shin from what it looked like. So the Rockets have kind of had issues with their young players, what might be their young core, dealing with injuries. Alperen Şengün, a bit more significant than what happened to Jalen Green, and he's not alone. He's the prominent name, but Cam Whitmore is going to be out for an extended amount of time. Ime was certainly asked about it in his first real availability since they got news on Alperen Şengün and the extent of his injury. This is Ime with reporters discussing Alperen Şengün and his injury.
Some relief. You know, obviously hate to see him miss time in general and be injured, but, you know, best news is nothing broken, no ligaments torn, and so although he'll be out for several weeks and quite a while, you know, big picture, it's good news.
We haven't gotten anything official yet, so can you say what it was?
Yeah, a severe ankle sprain, you know, a grade 3 ankle sprain. Not sure what that means time-wise, but definitely significant weeks, bone bruise on the knee. And like I said, when there's nothing broken or nothing torn and you're not missing months or going into next season, that's good news.
Grade 3 can be 3 to 4 weeks, usually maybe more. Do you rule him out for the season? There's 4.5 weeks left, or do you think there's a chance?
No, I mean, you just go into the rehab and see how he progresses through that. And so if there's a timeline of 3 or 4 weeks, we'll see where he is at that point. But, you know, don't want to speculate how he'll react to that or if he'll, you know, be done. But all how his body reacts and, you know, take it from there.
I don't want to get into some deeper, darker conspiracy, but if you type in grade 3 ankle sprain on whatever search engine you want to use, it comes back with completely tearing of the ligaments. And in some cases, depending on what result you get, it goes into the severe swelling, pain, and bruising, which you might imagine when a ligament tears. So we heard Ime Udoka talk about no tearing, no broken bones, but a grade 3. So is he, you know, backing away from giving all the information, or did he not, or is it not a grade 3 sprain? It can't be both if online sources are to be believed. He can't have a grade 3 ankle sprain and also not have ligaments torn.
Maybe he thinks it's like the he's talking about the knee ligaments, because there was a knee element to the injury where it's a bone bruise in the knee but a severely sprained ankle. And so maybe he's thinking, cuz it looked like just watching the video, like his entire leg is just got blown up.
Got pulverized, yeah.
And seeing like the injury doctors is always funny on Twitter.
Well,
they put like 5 different diagnoses, and you're like, oh my God, he could have hurt anything in his leg.
Yes, thanks for that. Well, we got someone tweeted at us, a doctor, an online doctor, but well, maybe not an online doctor, maybe a real doctor who happens to put videos out online about sports injuries.
Calling him an online doctor is pejorative.
This is why I had to clean it up. It sounds like he didn't even go to medical school. This guy is a real doctor who happens to diagnosed sports injuries from afar, which is always kind of a shaky thing. But once he heard about the report, he talked about ligaments being torn. So maybe it's not a grade 3 ankle sprain. But if it is, there's nothing to suggest that he got away without tearing any ligaments. And we'll find out depending on the rehab, and it's unlikely he's going to play, particularly if it is a grade 3 sprain. But if it is that level, that extent, he's not going to play this year, and ligaments are likely torn, and there is a disconnect between those statements that we heard from Ime Udoka. But who knows? I guess the biggest news is that Alperen Şengün is likely done for the year, and maybe his summer is kind of changed because of all the rehab he's going to have to do if it's as extensive an injury as it sounds like.
He'll still be good for
the summer.
No, yeah,
he'll be fine. Yes.
He'll be walking around whatever beach he goes to for 4th of July. Yeah,
sure.
He'll be fine.
Sure.
But actually, that might be during the Olympics.
Yeah, this is the thing. He may not.
Turkey's in the Olympics.
And depending, this is what I was trying to actually thinking about. If he is hurt as badly as a grade 3 suggests, he may not play in the Olympics, which would be unfortunate for him because the international game and those games mean more to international teams than it does to us. We look at the NBA as the highest level of competition, and rightfully so, because even the best European players and even from other places beyond Europe will come here and play. But the Olympics is still a big deal, and I'm sure Turkey with Alperen Şengün would have treated it as such, and now he may not be available.
I think they still need to qualify.
well, he was going to help in that cause. And if he's probably won't be available to do it if he does have a grade three ankle sprain. And ligaments are torn despite the disconnect between what Ime told us and the diagnosis. He's not the only one who's injured. And by him, I mean Alperen Şengün. Cam Whitmore, another part of this young core, is suffering from an injury as well. He got banged up in their game against Sacramento. And this is Ime on Cam Whitmore.
Yeah, it was a sprain, LCL, joint ligament in the knee and outside of the knee. And so it's a 3-week timetable as well. And so, yes. And so, felt some tightness in his knee in the game and got checked out after and found out to, kind of played through that. But, we'll see. We'll see how he progresses with rehab and treatment as well. And, they say 3 weeks, but could be a shorter timetable based on how he reacts to it.
The question is, can he maybe trust it? Sean, where are we? Can we trust the head coach? We can't trust any head coach to tell the truth about injuries, to be clear. But is it a 3-week thing? Is it a 4-week thing? I think we're at a point where we might just exclude Cam Whitmore and Alperen Şengün from playing basketball the rest of the year.
Yeah, I think in general, just the idea of maybe more Şengün than Cam, just given that Şengün played at almost an all-star level this year and Cam Whitmore is a rookie, that I think Sengun's done for the season. Like, it'll be close, but I think he's done. Whitmore can, it sounds like he can't come back just by the fact that Şengün got wheelchaired off the court.
That's very true.
Cam Whitmore finished playing and then walked over to the doctor and said, my knee's a little tight.
Yeah.
So I do think that they are on a little bit different timelines, even though Ime Udoka seems to just be like, I don't know, 3 weeks.
3 weeks, whatever.
I do respect that he's picking up the mantle for Dusty Baker as far as injury news goes, where he's like,
I'm not a doctor. No, I've just been told things.
Yeah. He tore some ligaments in his ankle. No torn ligaments, though.
Yeah. He expressed that it isn't as bad as it looked, and hopefully that's the case. It's just you can't tell me he's got a grade three and then say he doesn't have ligaments torn. But we'll see. Maybe there's just maybe it's a grade two. Who knows?
I think he means knee ligaments, and he's probably not like thinking about ankle ligament. He probably thinks a sprained ankle. It's like I don't know. You just sprained your ankle.
Who knows what the extent of the update he got from the training staff? But either way, Şengün done for the year. In all likelihood, and Cam Whitmore is cutting it close, because if it's actually 3 weeks, he might be back for the final week of the year, and then at that point, why are we rushing anyone back if it would be deemed a rush?
That's the thing with Şengün, where it's like, if it's going to be like 4 to 6 weeks, and we're already assuming, okay, so it's 4 weeks, and then he's going to come back for the last two games of the season on the shallow end of a timetable. It's like, are we doing?
I think the likelihood of Şengün seeing him again is very... It's probably zero, honestly, the probability of that happening. Whitmore, depending on how he heals, maybe he's in that 35 to 40% if he's giving him 3 weeks off the jump and saying, depending on how he heals. So a couple of the more promising Rockets, particularly the young players, we might not see again. Eric, I see you want to ask about running backs. We'll get into that. The running back position, actually, he's kind of had a bit of a rebirth. None of those guys are getting 40 million guaranteed, but multi-year deals for multiple running backs. The Texans were the fortunate ones who waited it out and found a way to get a productive running back without having to give them a multi-year deal. So we'll talk about where the running backs stand in the NFL after this bit of a renaissance of the last couple of days. You can't bet on running back contract, but you can't bet on running back yards and how many Joe Mixon will run for as a Texan, and maybe total yards as well, because he's the guy who can catch the ball out of the backfield. And you know where you can do that at? MyBookie. MyBookie.ag specifically. You go there, you see the futures, you see if you want to bet on the tournament games, you want to bet on the conference tournament games that are going on right now, you can bet on those too at MyBookie.ag. Not only sports betting, they give you a chance to play a little poker, some blackjack, some baccarat, and the roulette tables as well. The live casino is really next level. The in-the-flesh dealers are great, too. The live casino is what you need if you don't want to travel to play those online games. And if you're playing, you get to play wherever you want, from home, home office, your personal office. Doesn't matter. Just go to mybookie.ag to get started. Click on bonuses to see all the great ways to turn your deposit into bonus cash, whether you're new to MyBookie or you want to reload as an existing customer. You can also refer a friend and get more bonus cash. Just use promo code BET975. Turn your space into your casino with MyBookie.ag. Use promo code BET975. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere, only with MyBookie.
You're listening to the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
Welcome back to the show. We got a couple of things to get to, particularly in this segment. But first, Eric wants to talk about the plight of running backs. What's up, Eric?
Hey, guys. Do you think these teams overpay these running backs? I don't think running backs are as important as they were like back in the day. I'm sure there are a lot of running backs coming out in the draft that are pretty good this year. A lot of them on the practice squads. Also, Daryl, do you think Marvel lost its luster? I want to say it was during Infinity or Endgame, where all the quote-unquote woman superheroes stood behind Peter Parker during that Civil War and said, "What's up, Peter Parker?" Because all the women superhero Marvel characters content actually has a blunt. It's not good. Like the Marvels, She-Hulk, Madam Web. Do you think they're trying to go too woke? I'll hang up and listen.
Well, I don't know if it's woke to have women in movies. I mean, the characters do exist. They didn't make them up specifically for the Marvel Cinematic Universe. They were always women superheroes. So I'm not sure if woke is a particular term we're looking for. If you're asking me if that's an inflection point in Marvel, no, I just think they don't have a real plan. There's no real thing to focus on. I mean, amazingly enough, Iron Man was the thing that jumped everything off, and Iron Man wasn't a character I grew up caring about. They need to find, I guess you'd say, another charismatic actor to the level of Robert Downey Jr. to lead them into the next phase of Marvel, and find an actual villain that you can build towards. And they tried with Kang, but Jonathan Majors, real life stuff got in the way, so now he's not involved. We'll see. They have actors that people care about, like Florence Pugh in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, among others, but no, I don't think adding women screwed over Marvel. I think Marvel and their inability to tell coherent stories that people care about is the issue.
Yeah, I would say batting like 50% on movies. Is this movie good?
Yes, not even great. Just is it good?
Post 2020, yeah. I think that's the bigger issue.
Yeah, it's hard. They built the world for a decade and culminated with a great. Great ending, and now they're trying to do that again, and maybe they've lost the plot because of how big Marvel is. They can't do it in a small fashion to get everyone to care. They've got to have these big things and a lot of hands in the pot, and sometimes it doesn't work.
You're also asking a lot for the average moviegoer
to invest again.
To invest again and to invest in the multiverse.
That's true. That is a very nerdy comic book thing to care about.
Yes, it's like wildly incomprehensible to most people, because if you're going to make a movie that makes $1 billion, you're going to get a lot of people just walking in.
Yes,
they're just
true.
Walking in. I heard this is good. Let's see what it's about.
Yeah, you can't explain the multiverse over and over again every time one of your movies drops, and at some point people are just going to be lost, and that's just how it goes. No, I gotta watch Loki season 2 and have Disney Plus, and so it's a lot to ask of people, particularly when you're into making a lot of money and you need, as Sean mentioned, a general audience. As far as running backs are concerned, I think because the way the cap exploded unexpectedly, the cap rose more than some people thought. There is room for teams to pay running backs the way they are. And by the way, these are not the biggest salaries. They're still getting less than middle linebackers in this league. Like the Texans paid Al-Shaair more than any running back got this year, I believe. Like
Saquon,
except for
is
Saquon.
Close.
Saquon. Yeah. I think no, Saquon got more.
Yeah, but DeAndre Swift got $8 million a year. Tony Pollard got $8 million a year. Henry got around $8 million a year, I believe.
Yeah, it might be I think it might be 20 over 2 or something like that, but yeah, still less than
8 to 8. Let's call it 8 to 10.
Yeah,
and like you mentioned, Al-Shaair got 11 a year.
Yeah, middle linebackers are getting more. Middle linebackers, unless you're an all pro, are considered not a premium position. So no, I think running backs are still where we all thought they were considered. It just so happens that the cap is aligned for these running backs to get paid, and we know the deal. These things are always easy to get out of. Is DeAndre Swift going to see all of that money that was mentioned? Unlikely. Derrick Henry, is he? Maybe. So they're still, depending on how you value them, woefully underpaid or paid exactly right, but surely not given the same type of esteem that a wide receiver is going to get. And speaking of wide receivers, Justin Jefferson not getting traded, according to the sources close to the Vikings, despite the rumors, despite all the questions about who's this quarterback going to be. He's got to get out of there, because right now it's only Sam Darnold. The Vikings are telling the world they're not going to trade him.
They should tell the world also it's not going to be Sam Darnold.
Yes, they will find a different option.
We will, even if all of the guys go, if we can't get a first-round guy, guess what? We're going to take Bo Nix. We're going to take Michael Penix. We're going to take a second-rounder. If we can't get a first-rounder, we're taking a second-rounder.
We are finding a way to at least go grab a guy who will compete and then eventually beat out. And even if he doesn't beat him out, we're giving him the job because we're not dealing with Sam Darnold all year. We're not going to do that. And speaking of Bo Nix, the Chicago Bears apparently are going to send a large contingent to try to trick people into thinking they're taking Bo Nix. That's not part of the story. I added, that's me editorializing, but that's the gist of it. Bo Nix is having his pro day. A lot of Bears personnel is going there just to pretend like they're taking Bo Nix when they're really going to take Caleb Williams.
Yes.
I don't understand the duplicity about that, because no one's going to believe you're taking Bo Nix, but go ahead.
Also, the Bears or the Bears have two first round picks, so maybe they're looking at another one of the Oregon players.
Possibly.
They don't just have the number one pick.
Maybe.
Another, I think the eighth pick or ninth pick. They have a second round pick.
Maybe Troy Franklin, a wide receiver.
Yeah, get this. They have a third round pick too.
They've got, yeah.
Bo Nix, not the Bo Nix pro day. It's the
true
Oregon pro day.
It's not like Johnny Manziel when it was just him years ago. It's Bo Nix and Troy Franklin. And Oregon was a pretty talented team. They got a lot of good players. So yeah. They got an offensive lineman the Bears might be interested in at some point. JPJ, the guard who can play, the center who can play guard. He can play either one. So yeah. It's not just about Bo Nix, but that's how the story was, as I kick over an empty can. That's how the story was couched. And if we're playing that game, they're not sending people out there just for Bo Nix. But if they were, it would just be to try to trick people who would not be tricked. Yeah, Sean makes a great point. Oregon's a talented program with a lot of good players. It would make plenty of sense to go to that pro day to scout others. So, but Bo Nix will have the Bears looking at him. Among others, he is a likely first-round pick, or at least early second-round pick. So Bo Nix, the guy we all remember from Auburn running around and throwing the ball in places he shouldn't, is now going to be more than likely a first-day pick. And maybe, depending on how you think about Drake May, the third quarterback taken in the draft, the J.J. McCarthy, Drake May, Bo Nix, it won't be a battle, but where they fall will be interesting to me, just because they're, for the most part, completely different. And it all depends on what you prefer, really. I don't think there's a clear difference between any of them. When you look at the top, Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels have seemed to separate themselves from the other three. And it'll all depend on the coordinator, the preference, what they do in those interviews, and all the things that are kind of vague, but it gives someone a feeling about them. J.J. McCarthy's apparently giving everyone good feelings. So that Not in special places, Sean.
Oh,
just
okay.
Just they feel good about him now.
Breaking news. Browns GM Andrew Berry got lost in J.J. McCarthy's eyes in the interview that he had.
Don't put it past him, Sean. Don't put it past him.
His interview with the Cardinals ended with a kiss, sources tell ESPN.
A hug and a kiss.
Yeah, a kiss on the cheek.
As he walked out of the facility. They fought, they've been smitten by J.J. McCarthy and those dreamy eyes.
Yeah.
And that headband.
Yeah, the Bears GM Ryan Poles is laying on his belly on his bed with his feet up in the air, writing into his journal about how much he loved J.J. McCarthy.
And now inside the Bears war room, there's a split between dreamy J.J. McCarthy and the crier, Caleb Williams.
That crybaby.
Yeah.
Drama queen, Caleb Williams.
We might get to it. I have to find it. But Pete Prisco of CBS Sports has an interesting thought about quarterbacks who cry and whether they should get drafted or not.
Oh.
You know, yeah. You can imagine where he might fall.
I can't imagine that he's like, I love it.
The old curmudgeon, where do you think he falls? So we might get to that, but we do have other stuff to get to as well. I think coming up next, we're gonna play sound from a lot of guys who like to hold grudges. Three in particular. We'll just call it the grudge segment. I like holding grudges. I get it. I have feuds internally that I don't really express with people that they don't know anything about. But internally, I know I hate you. I'm just not going to express it because it's not worth it. But these guys don't mind talking about it. So we'll get to that on the other side. We got plenty else to discuss. Remember, at DelV2, at Sean A. Mapes is how you contact us on X or Twitter, whatever you call it. You can always watch the show, ESPN Houston, on YouTube, and certainly listen on the app or ESPN975.com or the traditional way while you're in your car, simply through your radio. Sound from guys who love a grudge on the other side. We'll be back.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios is the Del Olalea Show.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now back to Del Olalea.
It is the official opening of free agency as far as guys being able to sign. That I think that happens 3 p.m. our time. So you'll start to see guys on the Texan social media, whether they be in the city or doing that whole, what do you think? There'll be a thumbs up. What's the slogan here for the Texans?
Swarm.
Is that, nah, that can't be the
oh, like the hashtag?
Yeah.
I think is it still We Are Texans?
I don't know if that's cool enough to have Danico Autry say when he's official, We Are Texans. For the H, probably.
Yeah,
it'll probably be something like that.
H-Town. H-Town,
I'm here, or something like that. So we'll start to see that stuff on social media in the next, well, we'll be done with the show, but during right after the Gallant and George show ends, you'll start to see the official stuff roll in. And that also means teams have to get compliant. So guys like Khalil Mack, who is still a Charger right now, might not be a Charger because they have to find a way to create cap space so they can sign the guys they've agreed to and really just get compliant. They're way over right now. They still have guys like Bosa and the two receivers and Allen and Williams and along with Mack to just make decisions on as they try to become cap compliant. So official news will start rolling in here shortly, and that also means guys still on rosters are going to get cut too if they can't come to an agreement on a restructure or a trade. So I think names that you might not have expected will be available, and we'll see how that affects free agency. But before all that happens, I did want to get to this. I mentioned guys who hold grudges. I'm a grudge holder, but privately. I don't make it something where I actually have an arch villain that we have a back and forth with because I'm not a comic book character. Sean, do you have someone you hold a grudge against that even if they don't know it, you know it?
No, not really. Maybe in like situations like where it's like a car on the road. I'm just like, you know what? That Nissan Altima, we got issues for the next, until I cannot see them anymore.
Yeah, until you're out of my view. If I'm either you zoom past me or you're out of my rearview mirror.
Cut me off.
Yeah, either way, I'm going to remember you for the next minute and a half or so. Yeah. I have one against someone who used to work here. They don't work here anymore. That's kind of what that means, though. You don't have to repeat that. He, very early in my time here, and it's very petty of me. He like yelled at me over like Google chat or whatever. He went all capitalized on me, yelling at me about something I couldn't control, and I've never forgotten the moment. He doesn't know I don't like him, but I don't like him. Anytime I think about him, the brain starts to work, and I'm like, what a piece of crap. I was very young at the time, just starting radio, and this guy was yelling at me about something I had no control over, and he wasn't even really yelling. He was just capitalized lettering me. But I remember the moment. A lot of screaming about, Dell! I was like, all right, man, never going to forget this. And I haven't. We're talking about a decade. Very petty. Speaking of petty, you might consider Isaiah Thomas petty. And he was on the Draymond Green podcast, and he was asked about Michael Jordan. And we know about The Last Dance, and we know about Isaiah potentially being held off the Olympic team, the dream team, because of Michael Jordan. Here's Isaiah Thomas on whether he can get past it and whether the beef is over.
Where is y'all relationship at today? And is that salvageable?
Dude, no.
Not salvageable.
No. This dude got on national television, international television, and called me an asshole, somebody who's been really good to him. And until he apologizes on international television, we ain't no conversation. You can't apologize and have a private dinner when you didn't embarrass me publicly. If you didn't mean it, say it publicly. Now, if you meant it, let it stand. I'm good with that.
I appreciate the energy from Isaiah Thomas. It's funny, the word he used that Michael Jordan called him. Michael Jordan's been called that, and probably a lot of people believe he's that too. An a-hole. So Isaiah Thomas stands on business. He needs an apology, an international apology, because 30 for 30 wasn't just an the Last Dance just wasn't an American thing. People around the world saw it. So what's Michael Jordan going to do? How's he going to give him an international apology? Call a press conference, and I guess if Michael Jordan called a press conference, international publications and outlets would cover it, and that's what he's looking for?
You know how NBA TV did the settle beefs documentaries or one-on-one interviews that they do where Kobe and Shaq sat uncomfortably close to each other across in the interview kind of setting, just directly in front of each other, and then they would hash it out basically. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's what he's doing. He's come on NBA TV, the most international of all television.
Ooh, and he can't even get TNT for that.
Maybe before
that's Jordan. If it's Jordan,
before the playoffs, a inside the NBA special, before Pacers Knicks tips off at 6 o'clock.
Yeah, where Michael and Isaiah hash out all their differences.
They settle it once and for all. I think the play-in tournament.
I think Isaiah's gonna have to be waiting a while. I'm not sure his public demand is going to be met by Michael Jordan. Oh, no. Okay, you make a point here.
Michael Jordan, I mean, this is about Isaiah Thomas being a grudge holder. Michael Jordan is
a definite grudge holder.
Goat grudge holder.
You have Isaiah, who may be holding one specific grudge where all his energy is directed to. Michael has the energy for all the grudges. He's not going to, certainly not going to bow to Isaiah's wishes.
Michael Jordan has not liked Isaiah Thomas since the early 90s, late 80s.
Yeah.
He actually cut off his friend, Charles Barkley.
Because he wouldn't go strong enough in the paint on Isaiah.
And that Charles Barkley was like, yeah, Michael Jordan's not a good owner.
That too.
And then
a simple direct statement that everyone would agree with, but because Charles said it, I'm done with you. You're dead to me.
Dude, boom, done forever.
Yeah, because
20 years of friendship, over.
Simply because he told a simple truth.
Yeah, and that was 20 years of friendship.
Yeah, he doesn't even like Isaiah.
40 years of hate.
He's never
Isaiah.
Liked him, apparently. He's not backing down. This guy's been on our air as we move to a different grudge holder. Deion Dawkins. Deion Dawkins is a Bills offensive lineman, offensive tackle, got a lot of money this offseason to stay with the Bills. And in fact, initially he pretended like he wasn't going to be a Bill anymore, and then the news broke that he signed an extension and got paid quite a bit. He was with Kay Adams, and they discussed the potential of T. Higgins, who asked for a trade, and whether T. Higgins could become a Bill. And somehow, Deion Dawkins, because this is who he is, turned this into Jets hate.
There's about Kerry Vaughn, $16 million available right now. The streets are saying T. Higgins should come there. What do you think?
T. Higgins?
Mm-hmm.
T. Higgins from the Bengals, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we know that guy.
Would that not work?
First of all, it would definitely work. As long as we're not getting no Jets guys, I'm good.
Out of the blue. No one asked you about the Jets. I love NFL players who really aren't aware of the stars that we're aware of. T. Higgins?
From the Bengals?
You mean, yeah, the guy who eliminated you from the playoffs a couple seasons ago now. That guy.
He has to know who he is.
The guy who played in a Super Bowl, who's played in a lot of big games. You don't know who T. Higgins is? Look, some players are oblivious, but the fact that he turned that into, as long as he's not a Jet, I'm good.
I knew he was going to take a swipe at the Jets, and the entire time I'm like, how is he going to take a swipe? Where is it going?
He found a way.
I thought it was going to be like, yeah, or I thought he was going to, like, the second time he asked who T. Higgins was, I thought he was going to be like, oh, sounds more like a Jets guy to me. Yeah. Like, I thought he was going to throw a shot like that.
Yeah, he gave T. Higgins some grace, but not the Jets. That'll never, ever happen. And before we wrap it up, Ann Edwards, a guy who speaks his mind. In fact, he was coming out of – they played the Lakers and the Clippers in L.A. in the last couple of nights. And when he was walking out of Staples – or not Staples, what's it called now? FTX? Is that what it's called now? Or is that – I don't know what it's called in L.A. Crypto? Is it the Crypto Arena?
Crypto.com.
Crypto.com. Arena formerly Staples. I think I'm just going to always call it Staples to avoid stumbling over the current name. He walked out of there, and a couple fans were like, hey, Ed, how you doing? He goes, we should have busted your ass tonight. Because they had Lakers jerseys on. So he's a guy who always talk and speak what he feels. This is Anthony Edwards after the game last night against the Clippers and his thoughts on the Wolves' great third quarter.
What a game this was. You exploded in that third quarter. What were you seeing out there?
Just a bunch of mismatches. Yeah, pretty much.
This is a guy who recently called the Clippers old after they beat them in L.A., a couple, maybe a month or so ago now. Those two teams have played like three times in the last maybe a month or so. The Clippers got a win in Minnesota maybe late February, maybe early March. But Ant Edwards, if you're looking for a guy who won't mute himself, will always say what he wants and what he feels, he's the guy. And he just saw a lot of mismatches. The Clippers, as I mentioned, lost Kawhi Leonard for who knows how long. He's an older player, and when Kawhi gets hurt, it can always be an extended amount of time. It was his back. He was immediately ruled out, lost. I think he played like 6 minutes, and he was done. The Wolves beat the Clippers by 18 last night. Paul George looked old, which speaks to what Anthony Edwards has been saying about that Clippers team. Not afraid of them. But if we mentioned Jordan earlier. I think Ant Edwards, because haven't you done it, like the face – You've posted the tweet of the two faces, like Ant Edwards merging in the Jordan.
Yeah.
He's that guy. I think people look at him and say, not the next Jordan, because it's such a stupid thing to say.
No, yeah, but that's the thing.
But the energy.
He is not going to be Michael Jordan.
No.
No, he won't be as great. We're not going to be having Ant Edwards or Jordan conversations.
We've had enough of that over the last 15 years with LeBron and Kobe.
But the mentality is very much the same.
Yeah, and if Jordan had the ability to reach as many people as he can the way Ant Edwards does because of how technology has worked, I think Jordan would have said a lot of things too. But Ant Edwards, great night last night, beat up on the Clippers, and I think he's a guy we're going to hear is maybe not disliked, but people are going to have confrontations with because he's not going to back down from anyone. He's one of those who's going to set a standard and have an approach where all y'all can get it. And the Clippers are currently on his list.
Yeah, that's why the West playoff, I mean, other than the fact that there's like, I don't know, 10 interesting, no, 9, 8 interesting teams, is that you have a good mixture of young and old teams that are at the top, where you have the OKCs, the Minnesotas, but then you have Denver, the Clippers. I mean, if you want to go lower, you have still the Warriors and Lakers in the play-in. And you just have a lot of like, hey, listen, we're going to take it to these old guys. And then you have a lot of young guys that are, you know, competing head on head. You know, if we get a Shea versus Ant matchup.
Oh, like, did you see kind of Shea last night?
He intentionally fell.
If you missed it, Shea Gilgeous-Alexander was going for the record of most 30-point games in a row for a Thunder player. And they were getting beat, surprisingly, by the Pacers. The Pacers are having a pretty good run. They went in OKC and won in control of that game by double digits. And then Shea Gilgeous, when the clock could have just run out, he went and fouled a Pacer to send him to the free throw line so he can get one more possession. That is some real stat hunting.
Yes. That is the Suns, like 5 years ago, fouling to get Devin Booker 70 in a like 30-point loss to the Celtics level of like.
But at least it's 70. I get it's an Oklahoma City record. But it's something that only matters for the time it happens. 70 is something that's a big deal. Scoring 70 in a game.
I get what you're saying. The OKC 30 consecutive 30-point game.
Where does that stand records in NBA history as far as records to be broken?
Towards the bottom. It really only gets brought up when someone breaks it. Right?
Yeah, and then it never gets brought up again. In fact, if I don't know if Devin Booker will ever have an opportunity to score 70 again, so I get it. Shea Gilgeous-Alexander will have enough time to break that record. In fact, considering how consistent he is scoring 30, he could just start a new streak in his next game and be on his way to doing it again. But yeah, that one was it wasn't crazy because it's the modern NBA. But everyone noticed, and it I don't know if it'll make people feel differently about him, but I think it's something people took note of out here fouling and trying to get the 30 points again. And you know what? He got his 30. So he'll say, look, we're losing that game anyway. Let me get my 30. We're due for a break. We'll play some sound from Nick Saban on the other side. The actual sound from the tweet I responded to yesterday. We'll also hear more from Ime Udoka. And we'll play that Ian Rappaport sound again about the Texans signing Danielle Hunter and the flowery words. And also a tweet I sent to Sean last night as we continue our run at NBA, well, in this case, NFL newsbreakers and their inability to extricate themselves from the agents giving them news. First hour in the books. We'll continue with the show. We'll be back.